Welcome to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly. News, sports, and conversations that are important to Jackson County. This is the AM Jackson Podcast.
Local Jackson news now from the WKHM.com News Center.
Good morning. 5 minutes after the top of the hour, reporting with WKHM News, I'm Mark Daly. Man was recently arrested after he was found eating pizza and candy after breaking into another person's home. Deputies from the Jackson County Office of the Sheriff responded to Folks Road near Dew Road just after 6:40 this past Thursday in Hanover Township for a personal welfare check on a male subject walking in the area. While checking the area, a 911 call was received reporting a breaking and entering in progress at Folks Road. Deputies responded to Folks Road address, and officials say a suspect was located inside the residence eating candy and pizza. The subject was lodged on home invasion charges. About 2:15 this past Friday afternoon, multiple Jackson County deputies and a sergeant responded to Brown Road for a report of a domestic disturbance involving a firearm. The caller was located walking just into Eaton County, and the sheriff's office says the investigation determined that no assault had even occurred. The caller, who had just completed a prison sentence where he maxed out on his charges, was arrested on multiple misdemeanor warrants out of Eaton County. City of Jackson has announced a Pot for Potholes initiative using state marijuana revenue to help fix roads. More from WKHM's Luke Moorhead.
The City of Jackson says it is investing $250,000 in state-distributed marijuana tax revenue to repair potholes and improve road conditions across the city. Officials with the city say this initiative, which has been dubbed Pot for Potholes, reflects the city's commitment to finding ways to address long-standing infrastructure challenges while easing the financial burden on residents. The funding comes from the Michigan Transportation Fund, which allocated a portion of fiscal year 2025 adult-use marijuana tax revenue to local communities for road and bridge improvements. Jackson currently resurfaces or reconstructs approximately 1 mile of roadway per year, which is far short of what is needed to address the city's aging infrastructure. The city hopes this new investment will help accelerate progress and target high-need areas across Jackson neighborhoods during the upcoming construction season. More information about Pot for Potholes can be found online at WKHM.com. Reporting with WKHM, I'm Luke Moorhead.
More than 45 sponsors have signed their support to examine the ties between Jeffrey Epstein and Michigan.
And it would start with creating a special committee to examine the Interlochen Center for the Arts near Traverse City. The resolution would appropriate funds to find any connection between the convicted sex offenders Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, dating back to the 1990s. Epstein was a benefactor, contributing over $400,000 to Interlochen, and they say both Epstein and Maxwell spent time there and had access to young artists, and they encountered one of their first known victims there, a 13-year-old girl. They also say this was not the first known allegation of sexual abuse at Interlochen. That dates back to the 1960s. Ryan Recker for the Michigan News Network.
A lawsuit alleging discriminatory practices has been filed against Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson and her office. According to the lawsuit, plaintiffs Jacqueline Griffin and Sherilyn Sanker say they were demoted due to their race. Lawyer Leonard Mungo says there are multiple black managers that have reported similar treatment.
They are being charged with misconduct and or failure to fulfill their responsibilities, their professional responsibilities as office managers that are not in their job description, and to have violated various policies and rules that don't exist.
The Department of State released a statement that says, quote, while the plaintiffs have not yet officially served MDOs in the lawsuit, we unequivocally refute these false allegations. The secretary and department leadership hold themselves and every employee to the highest legal and ethical standards across the board. And it goes on to say, we do not tolerate any discrimination, harassment, or retaliation, and we are prepared to fight this case in court. On her latest appearance on AM Jackson, State Representative Kathy Schmaltz discussed legislation that she introduced to the House to speed up the state's plan to implement the science of reading curriculum in Michigan schools.
Yeah, and teachers have been asking for this, and to be 44th in the nation, I don't even know how that happened. But we really have to take care of this. And I've also introduced a bill to make sure one teacher in each school district is trained in Orton-Gillingham to teach our dyslexic kids. That's a multi-sensory approach, a proven method. It uses hearing, speaking, sand trays. They trace the letters in the sand trays while saying sounds. 15 to 20% of our people are dyslexic, and it's just so important we take care of all of these people and all of our kids and teach them how to read. So that's a big priority. Those bills have been, they were read in yesterday, so we should approve them next week, I would think.
Last week, the House passed legislation that would allow now retired government service workers the option to come back to work without losing retirement benefits. Representative Schmaltz explained that the bill aims to help with staffing shortages.
This legislation will help with staffing shortages in counties while also helping our retirees who would like to go back to work but don't want to lose their retirement benefits or pensions. Many sheriff offices, prosecutor's offices, other county government services are facing staffing shortages, as we know. So the bill is sponsored by former police officer Rep. Mike Harris. This would make it possible for retired professionals with years of experience to return to public service without losing their hard-earned retirement benefits. This at a time when many are calling for stronger public safety, more efficient government services. This is just another way to help fill those jobs and to help our retirees who would like to come back to work.
Representative Schmaltz, Veterans and Families Committee, recently heard testimony on her bill to create a program to help veterans in Michigan with PTSD and traumatic brain injuries.
It's a hyperbaric oxygen treatment for all Michigan veterans. It has shown to relieve symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injuries. Right now, 13 other states offer this to veterans. So my bill creates a 3-year pilot program offering this treatment to Michigan veterans at no cost. It will be funded through a grant program by the Department of Health and Human Services in connection with military affairs. Several veterans testified who've gone through the treatment, and it was really compelling. They showed scans of their brain and the healing of the brain tissue.
Representative Schmaltz regularly joins AM Jackson Friday mornings. You can find our full conversation online, part of the AM Jackson podcast. Last week's Fayette Township Planning Commission ended in a delay and without a vote on a proposed site plan for a massive solar installation. Large group of area residents turned out for the meeting, which included a public hearing on a site plan for Ranger Power's 1,350-acre Heartwood 2 solar project. They cited concerns that included potential impacts on long-term health of those who live near the installation, as well as its environmental impacts. During the public hearing, Ranger Power's development manager, Brady Friss, said the company's application was compliant with the township's zoning requirements. A review by an Ann Arbor zoning and planning consultant found several areas where the application was lacking. The shortcomings included a lack of details on the impact on the area woodlands, as well as incomplete information on plans for fire and emergency response, among other things. At 9 p.m., the meeting was paused, and members voted to adjourn the meeting and suspend the public hearing until May 7th. That meeting, which is set for 7 p.m. at Jonesville High School, will begin with the continuation of the public hearing. Michigan House has unveiled a $75.8 billion budget. Republican House Speaker Matt Hall says they have an $800 million shortfall they need to cover while still investing in some areas.
We can increase spending on education up to $10,300 per pupil, which is a $250 increase. We can give free breakfast and lunch for every kid. We can increase Medicaid spending.
Hall says Governor Whitmer wants to use the rainy day fund and increase taxes for that shortfall. The budget has to be approved by July 1st. If you're raising small children, Michigan Congresswoman Kristen McDonald Rivett wants to make it easier for you. She's introduced a bill to cut taxes for working parents.
What our tax cut will do is give a $5,500 per child tax credit for households that make less $100,000 a year for every child they have under the age of 3.
McDonald Rivett says parents with toddlers are working harder than ever, but still find it impossible to keep up with the out-of-control costs of housing, childcare, groceries, and more. Efforts to rebuild Michigan's teacher workforce are showing some progress, but there is still a shortage of educators across the state.
Officials say expanded programs like the My Future Educator Fellowship and Grow Your Own initiatives are helping bring more people into teaching. Enrollment in preparation programs is also rising. But even with those gains, the state continues to face a gap. Thousands more teachers are leaving classrooms each year than are being newly certified. While Michigan certified more than 5,000 new teachers in both of the last school years, Michigan is still losing 8,000 teachers per year. Leaders say improving recruitment and retention will be the key to moving forward. I'm Greg Bowman for the Michigan News Network.
Construction season underway across Michigan, bringing orange barrels and lane closures to roads statewide. The Michigan Department of Transportation says more than 90 projects and special events are impacting traffic this week. Here in Jackson County, drivers should plan for delays on M50. The right lane is closed in both directions between I-94 and East Washington Avenue from 7 a.m. and through May 22nd. And around the state, other closures to keep an eye on include Lansing area, multiple bridge projects causing intermittent closures. In Livingston County, I-96 lane closures on Tuesday. All projects are weather dependent. Drivers are reminded to slow down and follow posted signs in work zones. More concerns are being raised about excessive speeding.
Modern cars and trucks have more horsepower than ever before, and there are some who have taken advantage of that to drive at speeds way above the limit. More and more states are cracking down on that with heavier fines and penalties for what they're calling super speeders. There's also talk in some states about requiring those super speeders to put technology in their vehicles to automatically slow them down. One study saying 72% of drivers would support that kind of legislation. Jeff Gilbert for the Michigan News Network.
Car loans are getting longer, and that's causing a lot of other issues. Once again, here's Jeff Gilbert.
About 13% of loans are now for more than 7 years, more than half top 6 years. But many of those owners only want to keep their car or truck for 3 to 4 years.
That becomes a challenge that because they're taking a longer-term loan, they haven't paid off as much of their vehicle as they probably would have otherwise with a shorter loan, which means they owe a lot of money on their vehicle.
Srini Rajagopalan of J.D. Power says one-third of vehicles being traded in have negative equity. That can really push up the price of the new car or truck you're buying. That's one of the reasons why nearly 20% of monthly payments now top $1,000. Jeff Gilbert, the Michigan News Network.
Higher gas prices have yet to push people back into electric vehicles.
People are researching EVs more on the Edmunds.com website, but we haven't seen any increase in purchases of electric vehicles. Edmunds says growth is neither accelerating nor collapsing. And even when it comes to consumers just expressing interest, the levels remain below what we saw in September as federal incentives were coming to an end. Electric vehicles currently make up about 6% of new car and truck sales. Jeff Gilbert for the Michigan News Network.
An increasing number of people are being hospitalized because of tick bites.
The CDC says tick bites are sending people to the emergency room at the highest rate since 2017. According to CDC data, last week, 71 of every 100,000 ER visits were because of tick bites. And while that doesn't sound like a lot, it's more than double what we typically see this time of year. Metro Detroit health officials urge people to avoid tick-heavy areas like grass, brush, and wooded areas. If you develop a rash, fever, or flu-like symptoms within a month of a tick bite, officials say you should see a doctor immediately.
Luke Sloan for the Michigan News Network.
This special campaign has reached a major milestone.
Pure Michigan has launched the For Every Season of You campaign to encourage travelers to explore the state's natural beauty and vibrant communities during the warmer months. Building on 20 years of success, this initiative highlights Michigan's status as a top four-season travel destination. Governor Whitmer emphasized the spring and summer's unique appeal, inviting both locals and visitors to experience the state's outdoor splendor. With a budget of just under $6.5 million, including contributions from 26 tourism partners, the campaign will target out-of-state markets. Notably, Chicago will feature extensive promotional efforts through the month of May. Learn more at michigan.org/anniversary. I'm Tracy McCaskill for the Michigan News Network.
Spring may officially start in March, but a new analysis shows it arrives much more slowly across the country, and Michigan's springiest day is in early May.
Travel company Exotica studied when the last spring freeze typically occurs, then added time for plants and trees to fully leaf out. The midpoint of those markers gives each state its peak spring moment. In Michigan, that day is Sunday, May 10th, when the season is considered most fully in place. The study finds a clear pattern. Spring shows up earliest in the south, often by mid-March, reaches the Midwest and Northeast by late April or early May, and lingers the longest in northern mountain states. In Wyoming, for example, spring doesn't fully settle in until the end of May. Jackie Page, the Michigan News Network.
Hummingbirds have officially arrived in Michigan,
which means it's time to put out your hummingbird feeder. According to the hummingbird migration map on hummingbirdcentral.com, ruby-throated hummingbirds are being seen in several parts of the southern lower peninsula, including right here in Metro Detroit, Jackson, Battle Creek, Lansing, and Grand Rapids. Muskegon is the furthest north they're being seen. The hummingbirds traveled as much as 23 miles in a day during their journey, reaching top speeds of 20 to 30 miles per hour. During migration, a hummingbird's wings flap up to 80 times per second, and its heart beats over 1,000 times a minute. Michiganders are being asked to hang up their hummingbird feeders now. The proper way to fill it up is by mixing 4 parts water to 1 part sugar.
Luke Sloan for the Michigan News Network.
It's Monday. It's the 20th day of April, and today we celebrate National Cheddar Fries Day, National Look-Alike Day, and it's Volunteer Recognition Day. It was on this date in 1792, France declared war on Austria and other surrounding countries, starting the French Revolutionary Wars. It was on this date in 1912, Fenway Park opened as the home of the Boston Red Sox. You know, it was on this date in 1938, Roy Rogers made his film debut as a leading man in Under Western Stars. It was on this date in 1971, the Supreme Court upheld the use of busing to achieve racial desegregation in schools. It was on this date in 1990, Janet Jackson received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And on this date in 1993, both Toby Keith and Shania Twain released self-titled debut albums. On this date in 1999, 12 students and one teacher were killed in Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado, when students Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris attacked them with shotguns and pipe bombs. Klebold and Harris then died by suicide. It's on this date in 2008, Danica Patrick became the first woman to win an Indy race. It's on this date in 2010, Deepwater Horizon oil platform in the Gulf of Mexico exploded, killing 11 people and injuring 17. The ensuing oil spill became the largest accidental marine oil spill in world history and the biggest environmental disaster in U.S. history. On this date in 2010, civil rights activist Dorothy Height passed away at the age of 98. It was on this date in 2020, the price of U.S. oil turned negative for the first time in history. And on this date in 2021, former police officer Derek Chauvin was convicted of the murder of George Floyd in a case that prompted nationwide racial justice protests. Birthdays today include Carlos Valdez is 37, actor from Arrow and also from The Flash. Miranda Kerr, Australian model, is 43 today. Joey Lawrence, whoa, he's 50. You have Carmen Electra, 54 today, from Scary Movie, also from Baywatch. Andy Serkis, 62, actor, Lord of the Rings trilogy, Planet of the Apes films. Crispin Glover is 62, actor, Back to the Future. Jessica Lange, 77, actress from King Kong, Tootsie, American Horror Story. George Takei, Mr. Sulu from Star Trek, is 89 today. Harold Lloyd would have had a birthday. Silent movie era actor, passed away in 1971. Other birthdays today include Clay Cook is 48, multi-instrumentalist from the Zac Brown Band. Killer Mike is 51. Stephen Marley, 54. Musician Ziggy Marley and the Melody Makers, son of Bob Marley. Wade Hayes has a birthday today. Wade Hayes is 57.
Monday morning, I wake up with a hammer in my hand. The boss man yelling something at me that I don't understand. I don't know how I got to work, but I sure know I'm there. I'm old enough to know better, but I'm still too young to care.
For more local stories, breaking news, and interviews with Jackson's newsmakers, visit us online at WKHM.com. I'm Mark Daly.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
Back to AM Jackson, live from the County National Bank studio.
At 7:32, and we head to our newsmaker line this morning, and we welcome back to the program Senator Sue Schenck. Senator, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. For a Monday coming off of a long weekend, you'd feel like I think I'd be a little bit more refreshed, but man, I was busy this weekend. So it was a good weekend. Good busy.
Well, that's good. It's hard. I think in spring there are so many things we want to do, and there's just not enough time.
Well, you know, the hardest thing about the weekend was figuring out, trying to etch in the time to cut the grass, because it feels like it's way too early to cut the grass, but the grass doesn't care. The grass does not care. We've had plenty of rain, and it's like, okay, I'm growing now, and there's nothing you can do about it. And it was, having to get the lawnmowers out for the first time this weekend was not, well, it was not pleasant, but we got it done.
The night of all the rain and the tornadoes, I'm sure that everything grew 4 inches.
I know, right? It's like you wake up, all of a sudden, it's a jungle out there.
That's right. And we have a lot of weeds, and they're growing the fastest.
The weeds are growing the fastest. You're seeing a lot of dandelions out right now. With my yard, it's not necessarily, I say grass, you know, I say lawn, but if it's green, I'm happy. It doesn't necessarily have to be what's considered grass. If it's green, Mark's happy. All right.
I'm with you.
So it was a busy week in Lansing last week. Looks like there was quite a few things that came up to the Senate floor and were passed and pushed down to the House.
Yeah, it was a busy week, and I have been most engaged around the budget, but we passed out some legislation as well.
Okay.
So I'll talk about the legislation first and then talk about the budget.
Sounds good.
So in the full Senate, we passed out a bill that was going to the House that prohibits employers from requesting wages and credit history from job seekers and prohibits requiring an employee to sign a document that would deny them their right to disclose their employees' wages and discharging or disciplining an employee who discloses their wages. So that's a long way to say employers wouldn't be able to ask what is their credit history or their wages from people who are looking for a job and wouldn't be able to prevent them from talking about how much they earn to other people. And the point is kind of multi-pronged. I think the most important ones are, we know that there are certain groups of people who tend to make less for doing the exact same work, women, people of color. And so by not being able to ask what somebody makes, the employer has to just say, like, hey, what is this job worth? What am I willing to pay? And someone who earned less at a previous job would not earn less for doing the exact same work at their next job, at somebody else who might have made more at the previous job. So I think that seems like a good thing. And then also just allowing people to talk about what's going on in their job and their life is pretty important. Not being able to say what you earn can be a problem. So
it can, but it almost it's one of those things in the workplace that also would be considered workplace etiquette. You just kind of keep,
And I understand this bill allows people to discuss freely those things that they want to, but workplace etiquette, in many cases, and I understand what you're talking about with women and with persons of color, but in most cases, workplace etiquette is going to say, you know, keep that information to yourself because you could disrupt the vibe in the workplace if you don't.
For sure. And I think it's important to distinguish between what is workplace etiquette or what's this etiquette at all.
Right.
And what's legally allowed.
Correct. Yes. Yes. And that, again, I understand the distinction between the two as you discuss with this bill. But, okay, other things. Let's talk about what came out of regulatory affairs.
So there's been a lot of concern about the amount that nurses work. And there have been some attempts to regulate how many hours nurses can work. And so this is not that, but what it is to say that hospitals cannot prohibit, or I'm sorry, hospitals cannot force work nurses to work overtime. And so the problem is that hospitals are understaffing and then forcing nurses to work overtime. Mm-hmm. The concern is that patient care is suffering. And I've heard from nurses that say the understaffing is a problem, but the overtime, we've talked about this with corrections officers as well, that when you work so many hours, you can't do a good job anymore. Mm-hmm. And then people's care again is suffering. And so when nurses are dealing with life and death situations, it's really hard because they're perceiving that this is an unsafe situation, and they have been advocating to try to do something about it. And so this is an attempt. This is a bipartisan bill. It had bipartisan support, and again, it's going to the House. So I think we clearly need to, we're trying to do something about the nursing shortage. Mm-hmm. There are scholarships, and there's an effort to get more nurses out into the workplace, but then also to say, like, hey, you can't force nurses to work so many hours that they are unable to do a good job and keep people safe.
Yeah, over the last couple, 3 years, there's been nurse strikes here, nurse strikes there, or there have been what they have called practice strikes, where they would protest but not actually strike. But and this, mm-hmm. this has been a reoccurring theme with nursing in the state, like I said, for really the last couple, 3 years.
Yeah, and you know, it's a hard situation. I know the hospitals are concerned about having enough nurses. If the job situation is too difficult, or if nurses are worried about people, you know, being hurt or maybe even dying on their watch and having to live with that, they'll leave the profession. Mm-hmm. So clearly we need to do something. I don't know whether this will pass the House. It wasn't unanimous. And this conversation is incredibly important because all of our safety relies on this.
Right. So it wasn't unanimous. With that said, was it still bipartisan?
Or was it absolutely bipartisan.
Okay.
We had a Republican sponsor, Ed McBroom, of one of the bills in the two-package set.
Okay.
Or two-bill package, sorry.
When it came to the vote, though, I don't have that here in front of me. When it came to the vote, though, was it party lines, or was that blurred a little bit?
No, it was bipartisan, but there weren't a lot of Republicans who supported it.
Gotcha. Okay, very good. And now let's talk a little bit about budget. Of course, Governor had her budget not too long ago. It sounds like the House had their version of the budget last week, and Senate is working through theirs last week and this week, right?
That's right. We got half of the budget. Just to go back a little and explain how it works, the budget is organized by subcommittees. So, like, I chair the Judiciary and the Corrections subcommittees. That's two different subcommittees. And so we voted out half of the subcommittee budgets last week from the Appropriations Committee. they will all go to the full Senate. I believe that we're going to be voting out the next half this week.
Okay.
I know that I had to have all my stuff ready last week, and I believe the other chairs did too, and then we'll vote out the full budget. Whether that happens this week or not, I'm not sure, but it's going to happen very soon, whether it's this week or next week.
Okay. All right. So
And then our leadership will have some talks, and then we'll be negotiating the full budget between the governor's staff, the senators, and the House members.
Okay.
So it should be done on time this year. It better be done on time. It caused a lot of distress for people last year not to have it done on time, and our school districts especially deserve to have it done on time because they're making decisions in July for the children for the next year.
Well, when we say on time, I guess let's clarify this also. When we say on time,
that's true.
the goal is by July 1st for
right.
the sake of the schools. But technically, it doesn't have to be done until, what, end of September?
That's right. I think October 1st is October the actual, 1st. Like, full deadline.
Right. But we want to have it done July 1st for the schools. So that self-imposed deadline, that's what you mean. You feel like we should have this done by the 1st, right?
Yes, the self-imposed deadline.
Okay. I know with the Senate's, or I'm sorry, with the House version and with the governor's version, there's been, what, this $8 billion shortfall? I guess, where does that shortfall come from, and what do you feel like? Again, I know the Senate's about halfway done with theirs right now, with still plenty of time to go, but I guess, how do you feel, where does the shortfall come from, and how do you feel the Senate should address it?
Sure. So last year, we started the year at the beginning of President Trump's term with the strongest, one of the strongest economies we've had in Michigan in a very long time. We had a lot of money, but over the year, because of the federal policies, that has shrunk. And so over the last year and a half, it's shrunk even more. Our economy is shrinking. People have been laid off. Businesses are making less money. There's less tax money coming into the state.
Okay.
And then, so there's that. So that would have created a reduction. I'm not exactly sure how much that is, but it would have created a pretty big reduction. Then last year, we also shifted a lot of money into the roads, and that's creating a situation where money is still there. It's still in the budget. But it's going to roads and not to some of the things it used to be going to. And so that creates part of it as well. So also, I think there were some efforts to do things like raise tipping fees for trash coming into our state, which would have helped cleaned up the roadsides, but also would have created some revenue. Hmm. That didn't happen. And so that's part of where some of the shortfall comes from. What the Senate's been doing to deal with that is making cuts, and then, of course, not investing in new programs. So I think when the Senate budget is all said and done, I think you're going to see that it's pretty well in line with what I don't know exactly. I haven't looked at the House's budget, but it will be soon. It's also going to be a lot smaller than it would have been in previous times. And that what we'll have to do then is figure out exactly, like, line them up, sort of like two people are working on a project side by side, and they're pretty close, but they're not going to be lined up exactly. But to get it done, you got to line it up exactly. And that's what's going to be happening over the next month and a half.
Right. I know we've had, with more transparency within the budgetary process this year and more transparency within committee testimonies and figuring out where some of these community dollars are going to go across the state from Lansing. Do you feel like some of that could be pulled back on a little bit?
Well, I think absolutely the transparency is going to be there, but I expect there to be a lot fewer community dollars. And although I know that we've gotten a lot of requests from the community, my understanding is that it's not likely that many of those requests will be able to be filled, not because they're not important, not because, you know, the things aren't good. They are, but we just don't have the money.
Mm-hmm. All right. So more to be determined. Are we continuing on with some of those testimonies and this effort to be transparent? Are some of those testimonies still happening, or are we kind of past that part right now in the Senate?
Oh no, it hasn't even started yet.
Oh, it hasn't even started. Okay, all right. Okay.
So it'll be over the next couple of weeks.
Gotcha. All right.
Yep. There's still a lot that's going to happen. A lot we'll be able to talk about that. And try to get a glimpse of what's going on. I think, from my perspective and from what I've been hearing my colleagues saying, is people are trying to distill what's the most important stuff that government can do, and let's focus on that, because we can't do quite as much as we've been able to do over the past couple of years.
Gotcha. All right. Senator Sue Schenck joining us here this morning on AM Jackson. Anything left untouched, Senator, that we should be talking about this morning that we didn't quite get to?
There's so many things. I do think that we only have a few minutes.
Sure.
I do think it's worth noting in the weather that we've had last week, we have a federal administration that doesn't want to talk about climate change and is trying to pretend that it's not happening. What happened last week fits in with the description of what scientists told us would be happening with the increase in carbon emissions in the atmosphere. More volatile weather, very heavy rains. Yes, weather is not climate, but this is part of a trend, and I just want people to be mindful of that. What happened across our state is devastating. Our infrastructure is not ready for it, and it may be hard for farmers to plant their fields, and that's going to impact our food and fuel availability. I mean, will we still have food and fuel? Of course. Will it cost more? Maybe. So I just want people to be aware of it and notice what's going on around us, because what happened last week, not normal.
Senator Sue Schenck joining us this morning on AM Jackson. Senator, as always, a pleasure, and we look forward to talking with you again next week.
Thank you so much. Right. I hope you and everyone has a great week.
You as well. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Senator Sue Schenck joining us on AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM.
You're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly.
AM Jackson on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk 970 AM and 101.5 FM, and online at WKHM.com.
At 16 minutes now after 8 o'clock here at News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM, this is AM Jackson. My name is Mark Daly, and we welcome for the first time to the studio, we have Derek Oxley joining us here today from Jackson Public Schools. Go ahead and grab that nice, close, and tight. There you go. There you go.
Good morning.
Now let's dispel any questions that are going to come up. No relation to Kevin Oxley.
Nope.
I am not. At least as far as you know.
Not so far as I know.
Hey, good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, Derek, we have a big event that's going to be happening at The Crossing.
Yes.
And some of our listeners will refer to it as The Plaza. What's going on at The Crossing?
So we have the annual Jackson County Youth Art Show going on, and it opens today, this afternoon at 4, and it will continue through Sunday the 2nd.
Okay, so when we say Jackson County Youth Art Show going on, what does that mean? I mean, is it like certain age groups? Is it all schools? What is it?
So this is a representation of schools, 13 different school systems from throughout the county, representing anywhere from pre-kindergarten up through seniors in high school.
Okay. Now, how do these students get their artwork into the show?
Each teacher has their own way of curating it. Some, like myself, curate it ourselves throughout the year, select stuff out as the year goes on. So we have a representation of kind of the entirety of our program. Some will focus on special projects maybe that are, in a few spaces throughout the year. Kind of to each their own.
Okay.
Yes.
So now you're the art teacher for middle school at Parkside?
Correct.
Okay. So how many grades are you? Are you teaching all the grades there?
Yeah. So I have 6th, 7th, and 8th there.
All right. That's a tough crowd.
Man. It is. I love what I do, but we're definitely a different kind who work with middle school.
Yes. Are we seeing, we're going to probably just scoot a little bit away from what you're here to talk about just a little bit, and we'll circle back to it. Sure. But are you seeing that, it felt like for a while, the arts in school was finding difficult footholds. It was not as commonplace as it was like when I went to school. Are you seeing that pendulum kind of coming back? Are you seeing art as kind of having more of a foothold in schools now?
I feel that if it isn't making a comeback mm-hmm. everywhere, there's definitely a desire to have it back. Okay. So I feel the demand will start bringing the pendulum back.
Okay. So what is it about? What's bringing that pendulum back then?
I think a lot of it is just that removal from just physical interaction with stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for my students, my middle schoolers, not all of them have an elementary experience before they get to me. So they're just thrilled to be able to physically handle stuff.
Yeah.
You know, paint, clay, things like that, that it's not a screen.
Okay. It's more than just macaroni and glue.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, right. What is it about art that, why is that so important for students in the public school system?
We're creative beings as humans. It's what we do, whether we realize it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for kids, it's a part of their growth and development. It's how our brain does its neurowiring.
Okay. When you're coming up, I guess I kind of want to get into your head a little bit. How do you come up with the curriculum? How do you decide what you're going to have your kids doing throughout the school year and kind of give them a diverse look at art?
So our curriculum that we use in the state of Michigan actually is, there's a set of standards and benchmarks.
Okay.
And the national curriculum echoes it. Michigan kind of paved the way with things like that back in the late 70s, early 80s. I was fortunate enough to have both of the ones spearheading that, Dr. Bill Sharland and Dr. Diane Cordage, as my professors coming up. Diane was my bachelor's degree professor, and Bill was there for my grad work.
Okay. All right. So is this what you wanted to fall into? Did you always want to be an art teacher, or were you going to be like doing Picasso's? I mean, what was your goal? What was your gig?
It's funny. I always was drawn to art, even as a little kid.
Yeah.
And when I was a junior in high school, it was kind of, what do I do with this?
Right.
And I remember coming back from a session with a guidance counselor, and I was an academically solid kid. I could have done whatever I wanted, pretty much. And I just remember Mrs. Nolan, my teacher at Sheboygan Area High School, saying, well, Derek, what about teaching? What about teaching art? Like, you help people when you're done with stuff. Why not that? And 17-year-old me was like, yeah, why not that?
Huh.
You know, because an adult thought I could.
Okay.
And I haven't looked back since, which is crazy.
Okay. So has that been, so obviously that's been your career, but I mean, when you're at home, do you have a studio at home? What is it that Derek Oxley likes to make?
I've always wanted that studio space, and it's kind of one of those things, and a lot of us art teachers are guilty of this.
Yeah.
We don't make time for ourselves to create.
Okay.
And so that is one of the things I work at. And I have this little, it's like a little wallet thing that I carry with me. This is my portable studio. I fold. I do origami.
Okay.
Is one of my big things. And that didn't even come from an art teacher. That came from my third grade teacher.
Huh.
35 years ago, actually.
Yeah.
Thereabouts. So I will make little paper cranes and things like that and leave them places for people to find.
Right.
And I started doing that actually as a response after the Sandy Hook shooting.
Okay.
Because I figured, you know what, we need to see that there is still a little bit of good, a little bit of that peace and hope.
Right. You referenced teachers twice already. No, seriously. It's a, you look at, in the grand scheme of your entire life, the time that you're in school really is just a small sliver of it. But it is amazing that how much of an impact, you know, that small percentage of your life that you have with a teacher a year in a classroom, or in your case, maybe 3 years at Parkside, how significant of an impact that makes on someone's life.
Yes.
It's crazy.
It is.
If you think about it.
It is. And, you know, like, I have three kids of my own, and growing up, it was always funny with them because they'd be like, they'd hear somebody reference me as Mr. Oxley and they had no clue who this person was. It'd be at a drive through. It'd be at Walmart or whatever. Let me guess, former student dad? Yup.
Yeah. All right. So the art show starts today.
Yes.
You actually taking a break from setting up. So
yes, I'm on my way to do that. Yes.
Right. So that, and it's at the plaza, it's at the crossing. But this, it used to be something else. It kind of morphed into this a few years ago, right?
So from what I'm aware, when I came into the Jackson area to teach for Hillsdale Community 20 years ago, it was the Alliance Art Fair.
Okay.
And it was Jackson County, and they wouldn't, a few would come from out of county, mainly I think Hillsdale. And probably about 10 years ago or so, it switched to just Jackson. So it's the Jackson Youth or Jackson County Youth Arts show.
How many schools? All the Jackson schools are involved?
So 13 different school districts. So that's, I believe, all of our publics. We've got a couple of the parochials in there, a couple of the charters, the prep and early middle. Not prep and early middle, prep and early college are in there. So yeah, it's a good diverse mix.
Yeah. And it's not like you're looking for certain things. Like you said, each district, each teacher is kind of, they're doing their own thing and submitting it, right?
Yes. And there's no set amount of work. So each display can vary. Some are quite large. Usually our high school ones are our biggest. But it's amazing to see the variety and breadth of work that shows up every year.
What do you set aside? What stands out for you when you're deciding which students are going to be in? What are you looking at?
I think just the ones that just get the most involved in the work. You know, it isn't just the end product, it's the process. You know, and so that the end product is just the evidence of the passion that went into the work.
Okay.
A lot of times.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Some things that maybe we should be looking for when we're there.
I mean, it really is a variety. You'll see paintings, you'll see sculptures. We've had programs that have done jewelry making, even some metalsmithing in the past. It all depends on what we're willing to bring and set up in the time frame given.
Right. All right. So that's way cool. So it starts today. It runs for a couple weeks.
Yes.
Okay. Anything that I didn't ask you about Derek Oxley that we should be talking about?
I don't think so. I think we got it all.
All right. Very good. Well, looking forward to it. Plaza. It's at Jackson Crossing. You can't miss. It's going to be everywhere. Every nook and cranny.
It is. It is all everywhere. Yes.
All right. Very good. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
AM Jackson, News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM. And it's a pleasure to have back in the studio with us here today. We have Chad Gore joining us here today from the Jackson Commercial Contractors Association. You may remember him from our previous conversations with One Source, but we're talking JCCA here this morning. Chad, good to see you. Welcome back.
I appreciate you guys having me back on today. So we're here to just talk about Jackson Commercial Contractors group and how people can benefit from being part of it and using the resources that we have available.
Well, it all kind of feeds right into the vein of what we're doing here this week. This is, you know, one of the many conversations we're going to have about our local contractors, and this is Local Contractors Week here on AM Jackson, just supporting. And I don't think people realize how much in this vein, in contracting, general contractors, how much is actually here in Jackson. There's a lot that happens here in Jackson.
Yeah, there is. And there's a big resource of local contractors that are able to fulfill all your needs. So, when you need a job done, really, there's no reason to kind of look elsewhere. I mean, Jackson's got you covered. So, go ahead.
What is the Commercial Contractors Association?
So, basically, the Commercial Contractors Association is a group of individuals that own commercial companies that basically are in charge of commercial projects. So, be it from a large scale jobs, be it schools, private funding, to any company that's maybe looking to open a company here in Jackson. So, if they need something built, that's a great resource to be able to just tap into and look and see who's available. So, we have a directory that has basically from A to Z. Anything that you guys are looking for, there are companies in town that can fulfill your need.
Yeah, that's the directory that comes out with the, if I remember correctly, Jackson Magazine, right?
Correct, yeah.
So that's like the thickest edition of Jackson Magazine, that directory comes out in the middle of it.
Yeah, so there's going to be an insert inside there.
Yeah.
And so that's a great resource. You can just pick that right out of there. And you can also access that online as well. Mm-hmm. So that way, if you're questioning if you're looking for a company that's a reputable company, they're going to be in that listing. Right. So that's a great resource to be able to use.
So we just had a conversation with John Waldron Spectrum from Southern Michigan Bank and Trust not too long ago about using people in Jackson. They've got a lot of people there that are from Jackson, and they love working with Jackson businesses. And we were just kind of talking about that same thing before we came on here. You know, we got a project in town. It feels like, to me, it's so much, there's so much value to using a variety of general contractors on one project here in Jackson, you know, that are all going to be working together anyway, that all know the community, that know everything about our town and our area.
That's right. You know, I kind of prepared something that to talk a little bit about JCC. This is basically, so I'm proud to be to represent the Jackson Commercial Contractors Association, because the mission is simple. We raise the standard. We protect the integrity of our industry and keep Jackson's projects in Jackson's hands. But let me be direct. When you're planning a commercial project in the community, local contractors deserve the first call. And why is that? Because no one understands Jackson like the people who live here, who work here, and are invested in the city's future. Local contractors just don't disappear when the job's done. We don't cut corners. We don't just take the money and run. We stand behind our work because our name, our reputation, and our families are right here in this community. Mm-hmm. And to the decision makers out there, the developers, the business owners, the school boards, the municipalities,
right,
and organizations planning new projects, you know, let's give JCC contractors the opportunity to bid. Give the people who live here a fair shot at building the places they serve this community. When you hire local, you're not just hiring quality craftsmanship. You're keeping those dollars in Jackson. You're supporting local jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You're strengthening the workforce pipeline for the next generation. You're investing in the same community you expect to support your business. So that's basically kind of in a nutshell what it truly is.
Right. And everything that you're going to need for that project is basically available here in Jackson. I mean, from the foundation being laid to the wiring that's going to need to be put, everything. It all can be found right here in Jackson.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And we have commercial contractors willing to come out and look at your project and get the thing going for you.
Mm-hmm.
So all it takes is just a phone call, look in that directory, and we're here to help anybody that's in need.
You mentioned finding the directory online. We talked about it being a Jackson Magazine, but where do people go if they want to start looking, if they want to start learning more about JCCA? Where's that spot for them?
Great look is the JCC.biz is the best way to look right there. And so once you log on to that, it'll bring up our website, mm-hmm. and then within the website, you'll find a directory, and then it'll go from basically A to Z. And so anybody that you're looking for, you can just look right in there and give them a shot. And the funny part about it is a lot of times people have a hard time like even connecting with certain companies.
Okay.
But if you tell them, like, hey, I got your number from a particular gentleman that's mm-hmm. part of JCCA, most times they're going to call that person right back.
Right.
I've had a variety of times where a person maybe was looking for a lawyer, and they were like, hey, I can't even get a phone call back. And I says, here's the deal. Tell them I told you to call them, and they called, and they got an instant response mm-hmm. and got into that meeting like that week.
Right.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
Because they're willing to work with the local community.
It's about relationships.
That's right.
That's the reoccurring theme here. It's about relationships, and you have that in Jackson.
Yep.
Kind of like what we talked about earlier, when you're dealing with a variety of different contractors all on one job. And they know how to work with each other because they know each other. Even though you're doing different things, you guys know each other.
They do. We all know one very well. We work well together. And if there's a need, mm-hmm. we already know the resources to who to call.
Right.
You know, when that time comes up and maybe we're stumped by something, you know, we have the resources to take care of those problems.
Right. Yeah. And we talked about, now Ted's been on before, Ted from Christoff & Sons. I know he wears that Coney suit a lot lately.
He does.
But you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
And he talks about the dollars being circulated in the community, because you know those who are working on the job get paid, they live here, they work here, they spend their money here.
That's right. Right?
But I want to take it a step further too, because like with me and with those who sponsor this show, right, I use them, and I use them, I value what they do for me here, and I use them, and I know you have to do the same thing, right?
Oh.
You probably don't even think about it, but you're doing the same thing. If you are on a job and you finished whatever it is that business needed you to do, when you need their services, you're using them.
That's right. And they're going to call you back because they know that they can trust you. And it reciprocates, you know, and it's just an ongoing thing. So it keeps that workflow going. So it's just about a trust thing and knowing who we can call and trust and keep things moving forward.
Right. I know, because there was a lot of work that commercial contractors did on the newest Kelly Express location.
Right.
Robinson and Michigan Avenue.
Yep.
So if there's like a similar business down the road, you're not going, you're going in to get the sandwich or the pizza or the filling up at Kelly Express Mart. I know you are.
Oh, yeah.
Or the ham and propane that's available there, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you feel good about it when you drive by. You know, you feel
that's
like,
right.
You know, when you see local contractors working on those projects, you know, like things are moving forward in the right direction. It's when we start looking around and seeing a lot of other companies that are showing up out of town. That's when we kind of get a little frustrated and say, hey, what's going on here? Why we just want to you know, an opportunity to be invited to just a bid on it, just give us a chance. That's all we're asking. You know, we're not expecting to get everything, you know, as a local community, but at least just give us a fair shake.
That's
really all we're wanting, you know. So for all the decision makers, just give the JCC an opportunity. That's all we ask.
That would be the spot right there. Go to the website and find the local contractors there.
Yeah,
they're able to work with you here. Okay. If we have somebody listening, you know, maybe they're starting up their business, but it still falls within that commercial vein, right? How do they learn more about joining JCCA?
Well, the best way would actually just get online, and there's a questionnaire that you can fill out there, and then Angela Macknick would actually reach out to them from that, them filling out that form, and then see exactly how they would fit into our organization and see if it's a benefit for them.
Yeah. So we're talking with Chad Gore, president of the Jackson Commercial Contractors Association. But your business is also One Source Solution. At least that's what all the logos are saying right
now. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's correct.
So what is One Source, and how long have you been a member of JCCA?
So I became a member probably about 3 years ago.
Okay.
I've been the president since October of last year. And then so I was a vice president for 2 years, and then I'll be the president for 2 years, and then I'll be on for another 2 years after that.
Right.
So I didn't realize that when I got signed up. I thought it was just going to be like a 2-year deal, and then they kind of like, oh, by the way, kind of a thing. So I was like, oh, okay, so that's what I was in for. So I'm like, you know, I'm all about opportunities. So I'm like, you know, I'm here for a purpose.
Right.
So we're just trying to make some changes, you know, trying to bring some new blood, some new ideas. And I thought maybe it'd be a great idea to bring a contractor actually back as far as being a president of the group to see if that would make a change or help it out or anything, maybe bring a little bit different perspective on it, because it's kind of been through some different hands over the course of the years through different business owners and things of that nature, not actual contractor though. Okay. So I thought that would make, you know, a difference. So we're trying to, you know, implement some things and make some changes. And so we have a strategic plan that we got coming up shortly with Bruce Nicicio. He's going to be running that. So we're going to try to figure out how to do some things maybe a little bit differently and how to make some changes.
Okay.
So,
what's One Source Solutions?
So One Source Solutions is a property restoration remodeling company. One of the unique things about my company is we're a triple master certified restoration. So basically, it's like the highest achievement that you can get in the restoration industry. On top of that, we also do biohazard crime scene trauma cleanup.
Oh, wow.
I'm actually certified with Homeland Security and Michigan State Police doing that. So I actually have a conference that I'm going to next week, doing some more training with them.
Okay,
right there at their headquarters in Lansing.
Yeah.
So it's a good resource.
Right.
So I try to stay very active in my certifications. And so basically anybody that has anything from a flood, a fire, mold job, mold testing we offer now. So we actually can do air sample tests and get results back within 24 to 48 hours. So it really helps us figure out what's going on when someone's having a problem.
Yeah.
And so a lot of homeowners don't even realize the problem that they're actually having until we get there. And then we just try to bring some, you know, levity to it. And,
see
and
it
just
all the time.
Educate people. That's my biggest thing is I'm an educator. So that is probably the biggest takeaway. And especially when it comes to like in claims, insurance claims.
Right.
When a homeowner, business owner makes a claim, it's most times they don't even realize how to even walk through that process.
Okay.
Because it's so, they've never had to do it before. Right. So it's very hard to grasp, put your mind around. Because first off, you're in distress because of whatever's going on in your life.
Very emotional. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so your mind is elsewhere.
Right.
And so then when I come in, I actually help them and walk through the whole process for them and let them understand how it all goes from the very beginning. So that way there's no surprises and they kind of understand what it looks like. So that way when you get to the end, everybody's on the same page and they're, you know, and it's a lot easier to understand when it's coming from somebody that's educated in that process.
Right. So fire restoration, you mentioned mold. I mean, pretty much any type of restoration within a home, that's what you're going to handle, right?
Right. And then on top of that, I'm a licensed general contractor. Okay. And so we do all the build back as well. Mm-hmm. So that's the nice part about my company is we do from A to Z. Like from the very beginning, when you first place a call, we're there to the very end of rebuilding everything back. And most companies don't want to do that.
Right.
They just want to do the thing that's the easiest and makes the most money, and they're on to the next one, where we're there for the whole process.
Yeah.
And I think they appreciate that.
Yes. It's comforting.
Yeah.
It's comforting to know that you're dealing with the same people from start to finish. Years ago, lived through a fire and a restoration, and it's not, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
No, it's a
I wouldn't.
Terrible thing to go through.
It is. But to be able to work with somebody from start to finish and be able to get back into the house, that's a good thing. That's
and
a really good thing.
We use local contractors that actually, you know, that we got to sub things out that we don't do. So all from the electrician, HVAC, plumbing, you know, it's all local guys that we're utilizing. And even Christoph's for the flooring, you know, we utilize them.
And the Coney.
And the Coney, for lunchtime, right? You can't forget about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a little bit about what we do.
Okay. I know, I tell you, I come across, because I also, you know, work in real estate in the afternoon, and I come across homeowners, everything's perfect with our house, everything. And then once the inspection happens and they get in that crawl space or they get up in the attic and you see fuzzy stuff on the wood, you know, because they just don't know. They don't go down there. They don't go out there. They just don't know. And whatever, you know, roof was put on wrong or there just wasn't right ventilation down below.
Correct.
And then they need somebody to call in order to get the house sold.
That's right. And that's another thing we offer is like a punch list. So for a homeowner that's trying to sell a home and the inspection report comes in and all these different things that they got to do in order to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Or same thing, if you're going to buy a home and then you're going to walk into a space that you don't know certainly what's going on there.
Yeah.
I think you really would like to know like the air quality, what's going on there to make sure that there isn't a problem that you're buying, because we've done that before. We've looked at a house and then, you know, later on they had an issue come up, but if they would have let us do more of a thorough inspection and mold tests, air samples, things of that nature, they would know right from the very get-go of what they're dealing with.
Because they're going to find it.
They will.
They're going to find it.
Yes.
It's like, if it's not the inspector, then it's going to be the appraiser. Somebody's going to find it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We just want to make sure that everybody's being, you know, walking into a healthy space and, you know, they're being taken care of.
How do they get a hold of you at OneSource, Chad?
So best way for us is you can give us a call at 1-888-987-3264, or you can get it on the web and look us up under OneSource Solutions, LLC. And so you can book an appointment through our online, or you can give us a call.
Okay. And again, for the Jackson Commercial Contractors Association, find you online, right?
Yeah, jacksonbiz.com. So that's the best way.
Very good. Anything left untouched here, Chad, that we didn't talk about?
No, just the importance of losing, you know, local contractors and the benefits of it. So just don't forget about us when you're in need.
All right. And this is our Local Contractors Week right here on AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM. 101.5 FM.
You're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly.
Back to AM Jackson on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk 970 AM and 101.5 FM.
9:35, 25 minutes now in front of 10 o'clock. Boer's Fresh Market and Diner. They have, of course, their full menu on their Facebook page. Log on, check it out, and dine in. Or call ahead for pickup at Boers, 517-960-7419. They're open Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. And, you know, their smash burgers, which they have, it's like they have those dialed in. They're a perfect 10 every time. Thin, crisp-edged patties, double-stacked, however you like it. They're going to do that for you at Boers Fresh Market and Diner. All right, 9:36, 24 minutes in front of 10 o'clock. And it's a pleasure to have Kyle Holton joining us here in the studio today from Spring Arbor Lumber. Hey, good morning and welcome. Good
morning, Mark. How are we doing?
So far, so good. Everything well with you?
Good, yes. Good. Well, stopped raining, right?
You know what? We're stringing together a few days. Now, if the wind could just die down, that would be great. You know, it's I don't remember us. I know it's usually windy in the spring. I don't remember a spring that's been this windy. It's been crazy.
But, no, you're right.
All right. Well, anyway, Spring Arbor Lumber, we appreciate your support of our local Contractors Week and kind of starting us off this week coming in here today. So how are things over at Spring Arbor Lumber?
Yeah, no, they're going good. We're gearing up for spring, summer. I mean, it's kind of been a long winter, so we're anxious to get moving on things. I know is the season for outdoor, you know, equipment. We're thinking like steel chainsaws and power equipment. We do a lot of that kind of thing. And
yeah,
Ron's been there 40 years, and I think we've been doing steel chainsaws and
now who's
power
Ron?
Equipment for at least 40 years,
okay,
too. But yeah, so Ron, he's our salesman / technician over in the back, and so he's a real good super mechanic, so people love to come see Ron.
Right. I know when you want to get serious about your projects, steel's the brand you need to have in your hands. Yeah. I mean, that's been a long-time true tested product for for your outdoor projects. It has.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely.
Yeah. So, I know with springtime, we're talking about the wind. Of course, we had a lot of storms, so steel projects going to clear out any of those limbs that have fallen down or anything like that. If there's any damage, steel's going to help you clear it out real quick.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. So tell me about Spring Arbor Lumber. You guys, it feels like it's been a long time staple in our community.
Yeah, it has. We've been in business for, 66 years? I guess my dad bought this little tiny lumberyard. It used to be called Holtby Coal and Lumber.
Okay.
Right across from the Spring Arbor University. And we moved where we're at in 64, but been there ever since. And, my dad, he was an integral part of it till, he started getting up in his 80s and still wanted his deliveries, take out in his pickup truck or something. And then that's kind of stopped. He's, 90 years old now. And he still cares about it, but he doesn't do anything there. Let's put it that way at this point. But we've got great employees, and I think that our employee base has kind of put us above the pack a lot of times. So just knowledgeable staff, whether it's doors and windows, whether it's kitchen cabinets, whether it's new decking that's composite decking. There's so many different choices, and we try to steer people the right direction to fit their budget.
Right. Well, it's Jackson people from Jackson County helping people from Jackson County. It's not you're not getting decisions made from this, that, and the other place. I mean, it's here, it's in town. You know what's going on, you know the products that work, you know how to help the people.
yeah and that is very real. I mean, we definitely try our hardest to fit what project people have and try to fit what they need, and we work hard at trying to help people, and that's we're a Christian-based organization, and we've always relied on the Lord as being first in our lives, and then become after that you try to serve people like Jesus would have served us. Mm-hmm. So we are very servant-hearted that way and try to help the best we can.
So 60 years in the business, and I mean, you grew up with it then, right? I mean, this is all you know. I mean, tell me, all right. If I'm getting too deep, just let me know and I'll pull back. Your first memory at Spring Arbor Lumber was?
Probably 12, 13 years old, stacking wood in the bend and stuff. Yeah, and then the day I turned 16 years old, they needed a driver. So got my driver's license, and boom, away I go. I'm driving truck.
See, you didn't start out at the top, even though your legacy in, you worked your way up, right?
Right.
Because you had to learn the business from the ground up, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yep, no.
What's your favorite part of it?
I think dealing with people, we're just a lot of our contractors that come in, We have a lot of good contractors. I mean, we're contractor-based, but then we have a lot of good walk-in trade, too. And just the everyday dealing with good quality people, I mean, it really really helps, you know, just to make the day go faster when you're, you know, dealing with good people, too.
So it's you and your brother who run it right now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. All right. So what are the roles? What are the duties like split up? You're the president.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do a lot of the estimating and ordering lumber, drywall, you know, that kind of thing. Some of the advertising, that, and my brother kind of helps take care of everything outside in the yard.
Okay.
You know, as far as he'll take some deliveries as needed, or, you know, help kind of facilitate whatever needs to be done out back there and keeping things running smoothly outside.
So here we were talking about the very fun and uplifting winter that we had, but here we are. We've got winter behind us now. It's springtime, and there's always projects. You know, my wife and I were talking about what we want to do this year and some of the things. So I know those conversations are happening. What typically are you guys handling? What are like the first projects to kind of come out of the woodwork this time of year?
Oh, yeah. People start thinking, hey, I need to build a pole barn or a garage. Mm-hmm. And so we do a lot of that. Barn dominiums, you know, people thinking housing. You know, we can do anything from big homes to small to whatever, you know, needs to be done. But I know a lot of it would be pole barns and garages, but then there was also the decking aspect. You know, the outdoor living is huge.
Oh, yeah.
And so we do a lot of Trex decking, mainly a lot of woof decking, which is a PVC material.
Okay.
That's kind of upper end, but at a very reasonable price. And so, you know, some of the newer products out there, you know, it's like they've come a long way. And when we started dealing with Trex like back in the 20 years ago, you know, and then it's just evolved. You know, there's so many different products out there, and so trying to stay on the edge of, you know, technology and, you know, what's the best product for what can fit their, you know,
right,
customer's budget.
And it really limits the type of maintenance you have to do.
Yeah.
And
no slivers, no sanding, no staining, you know, so yeah.
The life gets extended, too.
So,
I mean, it those last.
A lot of that woof decking is, you know, it's like a 50-year warranty, you know, compared to some of these products that might be only a 15 or 20 year warranty. So, yeah.
Now, do you install, do you sell to do it yourselfers? Do contractors handle the work for you? How's that work?
Yeah. So, we're contractor based, but we don't.
What does that mean, contractor based?
Well, I mean, a lot of our customers are contractors that come in, and they come in daily, you know, a lot of times. And, or if they need something, hey, they call us up and, hey, send this delivery out, you know, and sometimes we can get it there, you know. Depending on the day or something, they might need it. Comes kind of a, you know, 2 or 3 hours, we might be able to get it out there. You know, it just depends on how packed we are. But we take pride in getting deliveries out on time and fast. But yeah, as far as we're contractor based, but we don't do any labor that way. I mean, we try to, you know, leave the contractors for that, and then we'll give referrals or something. But we don't actually do the labor, so we kind of rely on our contractors to, you know, help us stay busy, and then we help stay them busy for referrals too.
Okay. Now tell me about the delivery process. We were talking about some of the trucks that you have and how easy you make it to get the materials on site.
Yeah, so, we have, you know, a couple different trucks that would be called Moffett trucks. They have a forklift on the back, and a lot of times we can zip something in the backyard or, you know, take things in places. Like we have a four-way Moffett where we can turn it. If you had some long I-joists or something that has to get into a tight spot, we can kind of turn the tires sideways and go the opposite way, you know. I mean, so those things are really helpful. And then we have a boom truck that, you know, if we need to set shingles on a roof or if we need to haul drywall through a second-story window, if it's a big enough opening, then we'll do some things like that that, you know, a lot of times is hard to, you know, hard to get upstairs, for example.
I know, because you take those shingles up a ladder. That's a different kind. That's a different kind of brick.
You don't want to do that.
And drywall upstairs, if you can't fit it through the window, that's a pain too. Those sheets, they get heavier. Each one gets heavier.
The more older you get, right?
Right then, they get. No kidding. Yeah. So 60 years in business, contractors, spring projects. You know, we didn't talk about your kitchen and baths. I know that seems to be a year-round kind of thing, too, even though we're springtime. Because I see a lot of houses, and there's a lot I see. Yeah, we got to get rid of that 1970s look, you know?
it is. We have a gentleman, Rich, does a great job for us. He does, you know, designs our kitchen layouts and that kind of thing. But, Yeah, I would. That's a he does a very good job for us, and we have a full line of different kinds of cabinets and countertops. And
yeah,
yep.
What's the advantage if I have somebody who's listening right now? They're a contractor. They're out on a job. You know, they're used to using one of those national brands. What's the advantage of Spring Arbor? Why should they come see you?
Part of it's the quality. I mean, we try to order premium lumber. And so part of the quality issue is, you know, you're not trying to, you know, sort through barky material that's, you know, messed up or nasty. We're trying to buy premium lumber that way. And then, you know, a lot of it is for the contractors. It would be, you know, they set up an account. You know, if they don't have an account, we can set them up an account. But once they have that account there, you know, it just makes it simple and easy. They can call in and say, hey, I need this delivered, you know.
What's the turn?
Wednesday at 10 o'clock, and we, you know, we put them on the board, and we, you know, get it out there, you know, and when they need it.
But. Yeah. So it's a quick turnaround time.
Yeah. Yep.
For you guys. Okay. Awesome. Spring Arbor Lumber. We have Kyle Holton joining us here in the studio, president of Spring Arbor Lumber. Now, you also kind of started dipping your toe into the hardware side of things out in Concord, right?
Yeah. My wife and I own Holton's Hardware in Concord. It used to be Brigham's Hardware for 96 years or something like that. And we just wanted to continue a legacy that Brigham's did a great job of serving the community. And we're just trying to keep everything open. You know, we do paint and hydraulic hoses and, you know, rescreen screens and glass. You know, I mean, just different things that you don't always get from a normal retail store.
One is that traditional, personal, local touch, kind of like what we're talking about at Spring Arbor Lumber. You get that there. I can't tell you how many times I've had questions on things, couldn't get help, but you go to a local store and you're able to, nope, this is what you need. Let me direct you over here.
Right.
And, you know, and you just go right to the aisle, say, this is it. This is how you fix it. This is what you need to do. You don't get that anywhere else. Yeah. You're not going to get that at a big box store. You get that with the local feel, local touch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. We try to do everything we can to serve, you know, people that come through that door and help them to be satisfied when they leave.
But well, and it sounds like the same thing between that and between Spring Arbor Lumber. It's the same type of customer service that you give.
No, you're right. Yeah. I think, my dad taught us boys well as far as, you know, customer comes first. Customer comes first, and try to take care of them the best way we can, you know.
Right. What didn't we talk about today as we have Kyle Holton in the studio with us? What didn't we talk about today that our listeners should be aware of?
I mean, we're a full-line lumberyard with, you know, like not just lumber, but, you know, pine boards. We carry like a premium pine board or, you know, oak. Different kinds of species that way, you know, primed lumber or plastic wood. A new thing now is you don't have to paint, you don't have to stain. You know, you can put up like plastic wood for trim around on the exterior of a house.
Okay.
But we do siding. We do a lot of windows, Anderson windows we've been doing for, you know, over 60 years, you know, literally. And
that's the name in windows too. Yeah. That is the name in windows.
And that's something that, you know, we take pride in, you know, Anderson. I know if you have a window that's, you know, 30, 40 years old, well, you know, come see us and we can still get parts and pieces, you know, and things, you know. So that's the nice part about a lot of these companies are, you know, here today, gone tomorrow, where, you know, you get into like Anderson or something and we're still ordering parts and they have products that last. So
yeah, for sure. When you guys have been around at Spring Arbor for 60 years now, you're not going anywhere.
66 years.
66 years.
66 years this year.
Yeah, yep. I mean, you're not going anywhere. You've stood. No. So is the next generation coming up then?
At this point, we're just kind of in limbo at that point. But at this point, we have no upper generation coming into play at this point. No.
All right. So you guys are running strong and have been for a long time. So anyway, Kyle, this was a pleasure. This was a lot of fun today. Thanks for being here with us.
Thanks for having me, Mark. I appreciate it. Being on your show.
When are you guys open? How do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, our hours are 7:30 to 5 o'clock at night, and then Saturday 8 to noon. But you know, a lot of times if a builder needs to come in early, we're there a little earlier too.
All right. So. Very good, Kyle. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
You're listening to AM Jackson. That's Kyle Holton from Spring Arbor Lumber. This is News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM.
This has been the AM Jackson Podcast. Tune in live weekday mornings from 6 until 10 at News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM, and online at WKHM.com.